stony inches on the reel to reel. And the radio is in the hands of such a lot of fools trying to anesthetize the way that you feel. Radio is a sound salvation.
And you are listening. You're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acra Catskills. Today, East Durham.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to wgxc.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-I's into here's how you can's. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Spike's Record Rack in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Hi-yo, hi-yo, ho, ho, way, hi-yo. Yo, hi-yo, ho, ho, way, hi-yo, ho, way. Yo, hi-yo, ho, way. Yo, hi-yo, ho, ha-we, ha-we, ne. Sung-kwa-ya, ti-zo, da-hya, da-nye-te. Ona-ye-yo, he, asa-do-ye, nya-wa. Nyawa jizo he, o ila aji na we ongono lunkwa ge. Yo hayo ho ho we hayo, yo hayo ho ho we hayo ho we, yo hayo ho we, o ila aji na we ongono lunkwa ge. Sata deli wa kwenye asta, yo ha hi yo zata hita seli wa kwenye asta, ye tini staha ohunja. Yo ha yo ho ho we ha yo, yo ha yo ho ho we ha yo ho we, yo ha yo ho we.
Kayo wa. kwisun jasta na daga heno. Orin Lyons, that's my English name. Joak Gwisho is my clan name. The wolf is my clan. Onondaga is my nation. The Haudenosaunee is the Confederacy. And the Confederacy is better known as the Iroquois. We're old people. Been here a long time.
So the first question, from your vantage point and from your people's vantage point, what is creation?
Well, that's huge. It's huge like creation. Creation is the universe. Creation is everything that we can see and probably a whole lot that we can't, probably more that we can't see. But it's what's about us, and it's the relationship, this amazing web of life that we have here. And nature, which is part of creation, is more like the earth itself in its part, in its position in this whole web of life in the creation. We have relationships with all the elements and forces of life, including the sun, we call our elder brother, the moon, we call our grandmother, the winds, we call our grandfathers, the four directions, our grandfathers, and then all of the elements of life itself. So in this idea of creation, nature is the earth itself, and we call the earth mother, Itinoha, our mother, as we call all women Itinoha, mothers. And from mothers spring life, and we understand that. And we know that life springs from the earth, that generations that are looking up layer upon layer, waiting their time to come up and serve and be, is our responsibility. So the earth is female.
How are the earth is the mother, and so how are humans described? What kind of agents are?
Well, then if you have a mother, then you have children. So we're children. We're children of the earth. And we're tied to the earth. We come from the earth and we go back to the earth. And the earth has great systems of regeneration, great cycles of regenerative life. And it's these cycles that we're all part of. Just as the earth has seasons of life, all animals and all things that grow and fly, and including humans, have seasons of life as well. And so we grow in the same style. What's different about all of that is the time that's allocated to the varieties of life that are on the earth. And we have a fairly long system of life, but not the longest. Turtles live beyond us. Parrots live beyond us. There are certain mammals that have an older life cycle than we do, but we have a long life cycle as it is on Earth. And then also, when you move down to the fine insects, and their life cycle is counted in days. So what you have is this variety and complexity of life and the times that are allocated and what happens during those times for each of these elements. That's what's important to understand.
In the understanding of the earth, what are your recommendations for how we should treat the how humans treat the world and the planet and our resources. What is the disposition that we need to take, humans, toward the gifts that the planet provides us?
Well, what I've noticed and know about indigenous people around the earth is that many, many indigenous nations have been able to hang on to the knowledge that they have, the traditional knowledge, fortunately, I think, for everybody. And in this traditional knowledge is the directions are the instructions for a good life. So we have instructions about how do we conduct ourselves on this earth. And probably the first one is respect. And I think if there was a law, common law around the world, indigenous people, then I think everybody, respect is a law. And if people followed this law, simple law of respect, they'd have a lot more peace. And you'd have a lot more quiet and a better life. So I'd say respect, conduct yourself accordingly, and recognize what your obligations are and what your duties are. And the duties are to protect these life forms. When the peacemaker came to our territory about 1,000 years ago, and brought this whole concept of peace as the original five nations, the Mohawks, the Oneidas, the Onondagas, the Cayugas, Senecas, were in a constant warfare. And we had really forgotten our instructions that we had prior to that, and we're not living by them. And Peacemaker came among us and brought this whole idea, concept of peace and democracy. And he gave it to us whole. And it took him a long time to do that. There's a whole story about how he came and how he worked with Hayanwenta, whom you call Hiawatha, and how they worked and brought together this great confederacy called the Haudenosaunee, based on peace, based on equity, justice for people, and based on the power of the good minds, the power of unity, the issues of health, all given to us 1,000 years ago. And he laid out the process by which we do this. And one of the first things he said was he was going to give great responsibility to the women. Since the earth is female, then the women should be working with the earth. Men would be in charge of fire. Women would be in charge of water. And so we're the men, our work to see to the welfare. We do counseling. We do meetings. We do all of that. And if needs be, we fight. But basically, we're dedicated to peace. And that was what's so important about that time 1,000 years ago. When if you looked in Europe at that time, as great wars were going on, and the whole history of Europe, as I saw it, is one war after the other, century after century, how people lived in constant fear, and thousands of people died. Well, in this part of the universe, which was kind of just isolated, Western Hemisphere wasn't even known about, we were operating under a different system. And it was basically one of respect and counsels of leaders to try to keep the peace, because human nature is human nature. And you have to have a process by which to meet problems. And you have to have rules and so forth. So the rules was always based around respect. And fundamental to all of that was the understanding of how the earth itself was paramount to all of our life. And so in this idea of respect was also the understanding of what we should do and how we should conduct ourselves according to the elements of the earth and all of the natural worlds. So we always said that we have been told and understand that we're relatives. And where our white brother will talk about water and talk trees and animals and fish as resources, we talk about them as relatives. And that's a whole different perspective. If you think that they're relatives and you understand it and you understand that, then you're going to treat them differently. And the responsibility, the peacemaker said to us, was very clear. He planted a great tree of peace, a great white pine, a great symbol to our nations. He said, this is the great tree of peace. He said, its roots will be four white roots of truth that reach in the four directions of the earth. And those that have nowhere to go can follow the root back to its source and come under the protection of the great tree. And he says, on top of this tree, I place the eagle, and the eagle who will watch everything and watch and guard the security of this tree and will let us know when problems are coming. And he said that this tree of peace is a spiritual law. It represents a spiritual law. And the spiritual law is the law of nature. And he told us explicitly, never challenge this law, because you cannot prevail. You will not prevail. Wrap your laws, your rules, and your conduct. He said, you, the leaders, when you're weak as a human being, he said, this tree will give you your spine strength. Wrap yourself around this tree because it's powerful. Do not challenge the laws of nature, because you cannot, you will not prevail. Now that's great wisdom. That's 1,000 years ago. And it reminded us of our obligations. And so Indian nations in North America, South America, Central America, as far as I know, indigenous people around the world all have ceremonies. And these ceremonies are thanksgivings for what we have. We have just now initiated a great ceremony for the trees at Onondaga and longhouses of the Six Nations, still operational, and we hold these ceremonies for the leader of the trees, which is the maple. The maple is the leader, and so we have a ceremony of thanksgiving as soon as the sap starts running, and then when the sap stops, then we'll have a closure ceremony. But in between, we're thankful for all trees of this earth, wherever they are, whatever their names are, those that we know and those that we don't, we give thanks. And so if this kind of instruction were given and understood by other people, and you wouldn't be cutting trees all over the world and destroying the infrastructure of life and everything that's in the woods. We had a profound agreement when we first initiated the Five Nations, later become the Six Nations, with the Tuscarora Nation came in 1713, 1722, became the Six Nations. But we all agreed. We all agreed that we would work together and be together. And so we had a treaty amongst ourselves, and it was called simply One Dish, One Spoon. That's a concept of sharing. And this world has to understand the importance of sharing. I know that in the structure of the United States, it's very contrary to that. People are not instructed to share. They're instructed to gain. They're instructed to hold to themselves. They're instructed to gather unto themselves. And they're rewarded for that. And so you have an instruction that's contrary, very contrary to this whole concept, if indeed this is what you think is right. But this, I'm simply telling you what our instructions are. And so operating under this, you know, I've traveled to Indian nations across North America and Central America. And I always am invited to the ceremonies, and I know what's going on. I may not understand the language, and the dances may be different, but I know what is being said. It's always the same. Thanksgiving to the creation. Thanksgiving to the life-giving forces of the earth. And, you know, when the Christians came here, they made life hard for us. They brought a whole different thought and idea. And we're still suffering from that. But we can get into that on a later time. But in relation to all of this, and you're talking about conduct, a conduct is quite simple. Respect for life. And understanding that life is our relatives, and how goes it with them, goes it with us. And so we've taken this to a high degree. I'm the chief, one of the chiefs in the Council of Chiefs at Onondaga, and I sit on behalf of the Turtle Clan, even though I myself am a wolf. And I've been there since 1967. I have a lot of experience with different administrations, with different events in this country, and I've watched a lot of changes. And I see that we're not doing very well, that we seem to be moving farther and farther away from what would be good for our grandchildren and their children. And so I think that the instructions for people is to be respectful for life, appreciate what you have, share what you have, and make up your own mind about things. It's very difficult to deal with a whole nation that's instructed to be greedy. You know, how do you deal with that? To be mindful of yourself and your own doings and to secure everything for yourself and to become, as they pointed out a few days ago, one of the billionaires of the world. They promote that, and they say that's great, and they say this is what you should be striving for. But we look at it differently. That amount of wealth in this time in life in Earth is a lot of influence, and a handful of people with that amount of influence and that kind of a direction in life is not going to take you in the right direction. I mean, they piecemeal stuff, and they can't say that they're bad people, but we don't say that at all. We just say that their instructions seem to be directed in the wrong way. And interesting, you know, to us being an American Indian and familiar with the processes of foundations and people trying to get money for this and that and poor Indians and so forth. First of all, today, in all of the United States, we're less than 1% of the population of the country. And support for Indian causes from the foundation world is 0.06%, not even 1% going to Indians. Why is that? You know, it's an interesting question. Why is it that they don't want us to survive, that they don't see it's important, and that maybe we're more of a problem? I mean, the whole process of the United States history has been to assimilate us, and of course it's a question of land. So we've been fighting this whole issue of land claims. You know, in 1492, we owned all of North America and owned it in the broad sense in that it was in our caretaking, and no one owns the land. It always belongs to your children and your grandchildren. So we were protecting it in their interest. Well, a whole different thought came here. And when they first said they wanted to buy land, our leaders laughed and they said, "How can you buy land?" They said, "That's like buying water or buying air. You can't buy land. Land belongs to everybody." But certainly not. And today we can see, yes, they do buy land. You can fly over America and you can see all the squares. But all this land is bought. But the land that you bought, You don't carry the responsibility that goes with the land. It's a personal gathering. And so the consequence of that is it's deteriorating. And so I don't know what the answer is to all of this, except that under the leadership of this country right now, we're going downhill fast. And I think that this present administration, Mr. Bush, is acting in a criminal manner in not telling the children or protecting the children and grandchildren's interests. He's not protecting their interests. And that's really criminal. I mean, that's going against our instruction entirely. He's not protecting life. He's promoting the interests of business. And their interest is profit. So we're in the problem. And the consequence of which we look at. The present state of the world is very serious in terms of its health and how the health relates to us. I think we have to understand something here. And that is that the earth can deteriorate and ultimately lose its life-giving forces, and it can change and become barren, or it can change and become snow. It has its own direction. It has its own will and ability, and we're part of that. And so right now I see two big areas of concern. Some time back, when Einstein was asked a question about what is the most powerful law of the universe, he said it was the law of compound. And I pondered that, you know, and I said, compound, what does that actually mean? And I really thought about it and have been thinking about it lately, and I come to the conclusion that it's kind of like an explosion in reverse. It starts slow and ends fast. Where an explosion starts fast and slow. So compound are in two that I see. And one is a compound of the ice melting, and the other is a compound of human population. Both are moving and accelerating. Both are under their own direction. It doesn't seem like there's a control factor here for either one. Certainly the ice melt is something beyond our control at the moment, because what it takes the instruction of the peacemaker to be of one mind. He said when you're of one mind, the power of the good mind can change anything. And so so we have to somehow get to that point of unity of thought and direction and effort. And if we can do that, we certainly can mitigate what's going on now. You know, when we're concerned is for the children and their grandchildren and their children. Peacemaker said, you know, that we're responsible and that we should be always watching. And so I think what he's saying and the instruction is correct and could happen. America is isolated from the world, both in thought and conduct, size, oceans. And in that isolation, you know, it's heavily involved in what's going on inside of America. Like, for instance, you know, and I'm part of that too, because this weekend, Syracuse University just won the Big East title. Well, I'm an alumni of Syracuse, and so I enjoyed that. But this whole country is fixed on the idea of sports. It's fixed on the idea of distractions and human titillation, if you will, or whatever it may be. And they're not looking at the large pictures. And they've become insulated against the realities of the world. Even our poor people, poor people in the U.S. would be wealthy in any other part of the world. I mean, poor people in America have television sets. That's not the way it is in the rest of the world. And we're just maybe one-fifth of the population of the whole world, and yet we're using one-quarter of all the resources. I know Vice President Cheney said, well, if we're creating one-quarter of the energy of the world, then it's just right for us to use one-quarter of the resources. Well, that kind of thinking is very destructive. So I think we have to adjust and be alert and aware. We have to get a message to the people, and they have to understand the seriousness of this situation right now, this compounding of human population. You know, Lester Brown, who's you know, recognized as one of the great scientists of the world concerning environment and interests, said that in 1950, there was 2.5 billion people in the world. 2000, there were 6 billion.
Good morning. My name is Matthew O'Neill, and you're listening to Panther Mountain Sound on WGXC Acre 90.7 FM. A little bit different show today. We're hearing from Elder Faith Keeper Warren Lyons, an interview that's about 7 years old, but very pertinent today. And I thought the his articulation of the urgency of indigenous values would be welcomed. So we're going to continue with this interview, and I hope you're enjoying his words of wisdom.
Nations have what they call prophecies, but also the Bible has prophecies. And people have had prophecies all the time. Seems to be part of human nature. And these prophecies, currently we're working on organizing them. And as I studied them, I come to the conclusion they're not so much prophecies as they are instructions of conduct. And the prophecies being that this will happen if you don't do this, or this will happen if you drop this. So it always leaves the option to the present. It always leaves the option to the current generation. And I think that that's the importance of these prophecies. Now, we've had three major events for the Haudenosaunee. One was the first time when we were given the instructions of how to live, which some people would call religion or ceremonies. And that was long ago. We're not sure exactly when, but we do know the process, and we knew what happened, how it happened, but very, very, very long ago. And then somehow we got lost, personally. I mean, the six, five nations, and began this fighting. And then we had the second instruction support, and that was the coming of the peacemaker, spiritual being, who gave us this great idea of democracy and organized our thoughts in that direction. And I mentioned earlier that he gave this responsibility of raising the leaders to the women. He also instructed us on the importance of clans. So I think this relationship is important. People should understand the relationship between us and the natural world. And we love that so much that we have taken on the symbol of our relatives. And so, as you see, I'm wearing the symbol of the turtle. Well, the turtle also represents North America, the Great Turtle Island. And it's a symbol of longevity and of strength. And so we have a turtle clan, and yet I told you I'm a wolf. So we have a relative of a wolf, and the deer, and the bear, and the eel, and the hawk, and the beaver, snipe, all of these. And the different nations have different clans sometimes. I'm just astonished by the amount of clans that the Hopis have and the amount of clans that the Navajos have. They have a Wind clan. Just about whatever you could think of. There's a clan, but it's all related to nature. And so that's how we see ourselves. And a wolf is a wolf is a wolf. And so I'm always mindful of what's happening to my four-footed brother. And we were instructed to watch that and to see, because they said whatever happens to him is going to happen to you. And so how we treat these animals who are doing what they do they live in a state of grace. They don't do anything wrong. They just do what they do. And they do their best to do it in spite of everything and everything. They continue. So, you know, in New York City, as we sit here, pretty quick now, there's going to be hawks flying through here. And certainly the geese are flying. And this is an old flyway right here. They used to stop here all the time. They still fly. They still go by here because it's an old rule, an old law. It goes on. It's just that you don't see them. But they are doing their best to continue. And so it's like that around everywhere. And we have to understand this relationship. And so we have that. And it brings us closer. And it helps us to respect better how they serve with us and how life works. Quite a while back, maybe 150 years ago, Chief Seattle said something that was very profound. Said a lot that was very profound. But one thing he said was, we are part of a web of life. And every strand is important. And that what befalls one part will befall the other. And so this is what we don't seem to understand or comprehend, is this web of life that we live in and how interdependent we are. So, you know, there was also an observation made just not very long ago about the body weight of human beings. Some way, way, way back, many years, when the body weight was just something like one point something of the weight of all mammals in the world. And today, the body weight of human beings is 98%. And all of the animals in the world are 2%. Think about that. Think what we've done already. So there's a great imbalance. There's a great imbalance of humanity on this earth, and the natural laws don't abide that. They don't abide. And there's law, and the best thing you can do is keep the balance. So we should be paying real attention to that. And just the quality of life that comes from all the beings that are here will be they'll be denied our grandchildren. And then when they lose that, then they lose even better perspective of how to survive. So we're destroying their well-being. We're really destroying the efforts that they can put forward if they have the respect and knowledge. I don't know. This style of talking and observation, they tell me, is not realistic in today's times. And I suppose not if you're thinking in terms of Wall Street and you're thinking in terms of power and authority. But in the long run, it is absolutely the law. And as the peacemaker told us a long time ago, it will prevail. And so the earth itself, well, it'll change. It'll cool down. We'll have another ice age. And we're in that process right now. The trigger has been pulled. The action is taken, and it's going on right now. And I've had long discussions with scientists in different parts of the world, and they tell us that's exactly what's going on. The amazing thing is that this country, the United States, refuses to acknowledge that. Just astonishing. And time is an element now. And now we're bringing in another element, time. So how much time? And that's always a question. That was a three-part series written in the New Yorker. I don't know whether you're aware of it or saw it last spring, written by this woman. Probably, I think, one of the best compilations of fact. Very realistic assessment of what's going on. And in that discussion, in her story, she told about how this present administration went to one of the scientists that knows about all of this here in New York and asked him what was his prognosis. And he said, it's bad. We'll be lucky to be here in 100 years and maybe sooner. And he said also that people are going to have to adapt to the changes, but the changes are going to come so fast that you won't be able to adapt. So it struck a chord, because I remember at one point when the president was asked about this climate change, which is a softer discussion of global warming. When he was asked about this, he said, well, we're just going to have to adapt. So now I understood that he did know, and he was instructed. And he simply chose to use the words, we will have to adapt. Well, of course we will. I mean, there's no other option. And whether you're capable, he didn't go on any further. So his awareness then is obvious, which makes his culpability more. The world needs good leaders and good leadership. So I think what's happening now is clearly an indication of where we are. It's a international, universal action now taken by these huge systemic changes. The Gulf Stream is slowing down in the Atlantic Ocean, has been slowing down. 1960, the whole of the Atlantic Ocean was pure salt water. And now a convection of ice water, snow, and the melting of the snow and ice has mitigated the salt water. And we now have a convection of fresh water that's reaching all the way to the Carolinas. The result is that the Gulf Stream is slowing down. And a report from University of Bergen, a university that sits on the coastline of Norway, who monitors the current, gave a report in 2001. And they said more or less, and I don't have the exact words, but more or less they said, Gulf Stream slowing down. And if it continues to slow down at the pace it's doing, it could conceivably stop altogether within the next 15 years. And so here we are now, and that's what's changing. Now we're hearing and seeing in one report after another the acceleration of the ice melt. Well, that's the condition of the Earth. That's where we are. And so how do we meet that challenge? Well, we have to take some instruction. And people, I should give you some hope here in that other nations of the world are very much aware of this and are trying hard. And they look at the United States as completely crazy. They think that this country is just simply not in its right mind in the direction it's taking. And they're looking at us as a whole. But I remember, too, that when in 1992, when we went to the Rio meeting on the issues of environment, a great meeting that was held in Rio, and when President Bush, number one, spoke, he said, and I guess I have to paraphrase again because I do remember it, he said, and I'm trying to remember. He said the American standard of living for the United States is not up for discussion here. That's an amazing statement, because everybody had come from around the world, I don't know, the biggest gathering of world leaders ever, to meet this problem, and he laid it right out flat. Well, okay, that's everybody's problem, but we're not going to discuss that here. And when you're talking about one of the biggest instigators and problem, and the leader says that, then it doesn't leave you much hope. So I think the American population have to really think about leadership now. Got to change leadership, and you got to get good leadership. And leadership has to be responsive to the welfare of the people, not to the welfare of interests. And those are simple things, but they're very difficult. I think the democratic process in America has been co-opted now by corporations and big money. And it's hard to even reach the ear of your representative for the common person. So the common person feels helpless. But they aren't, if they understand. And in this idea of democracy, which I must say, the Iroquois had a lot to do with, you know. If you read the discussion by Ben Franklin, he tell you that he was very, very impressed with this idea of democracy and leadership by agreement and consent, and the ability to set up leaders and remove them. He was very, very impressed. And so, you know, from 1754, when they had the discussion in Albany, Plan of Union, came directly from Six Nations. He asked our leaders to preside. A chief by the name of Hendrick, Mohawk chief, presided at that time, explained, talk about democracy. So we've had a lot to do, and we have, you know, in 1987, the Senate passed S-76, recognizing the contribution of the Iroquois to the Constitution of the United States. So it's there. That was 100% passed, if you can think of that. And that was hopeful. So I think that the earmarks are here of what's happening. You can look about and see the change in temperatures. Everybody's kind of basking in the warm winters, and kind of they don't say so, but they like it. But the lack of snow on the ground is bad for the earth. That's water. Earth is water.
Was what the horse was on a goddy gooder when a hobby and gooder and all the nature not to be on the hot and you don't know what to go.